Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emmett Mann. Rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platforms and on YouTube. Like and subscribe there as well. Joining me today, new podcast contributor, Javon Shepherd. Played over a decade with Team Canada, doing all kinds of great stuff over at TSN, Sportsnet, wherever. You're the up-and-comer right now, I would say, in basketball, sports, media. Man, what's up? It's great to have you aboard.
Man, it's great to be here, man. Like you said, just everywhere where basketball is, we're there, we're having fun with it, and it's always a good time to talk hoops, man, especially with everything that's transpired over the last, week now, and over the last 48 hours here in Raptorland and so forth.
24 hours, 12 hours, yeah. Jesus. Everything. Crazy, man. Yeah, and what I love about your perspective, and like Akia Nurse and CJ, who I do the Strictly Hoops show with, is the perspective is just different. There are things that you guys know and ways you can articulate what players are feeling in ways that right. We just can't understand. We're always about X's and O's, or it's about narratives and stuff like that, and you're thinking about it just in a different kind of scale.
Completely different.
This is probably a great time, actually, to have that kind of conversation, because yesterday, Masai Ujiri spoke. He talked about, you know, why he went the route he did. Obviously, we now know that, you know, Jakob Poeltl's on board. Didn't make any trades. Everyone thought somebody would have to go, right? Just due to, you know, cap circumstances and stuff like that. And Masai's like, nope, your three first-round picks is not good enough for OG Anunoby. No, we're not going to do that. Pascal Siakam, sure. We can talk about it, but he's not going anywhere. Kevin Durant, you can take your ass to the Phoenix, because we're not going to be giving you the Brooklyn Nets. We're not going to give you the guy that you want. But an interesting thing. So I guess just your general thoughts on what went down yesterday from the Raptors' perspective.
It's funny because, you know, watch that press conference and, you know, a lot of people left that and said, Messiah, you know, just seems sad or dejected and so forth. But to me, I thought that was, you know, impressive, and a message to his locker room, his guys, right?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that stuck out to me is he said, maybe it's me. Maybe, you know, I haven't given these guys enough to work with. So there was an accountability piece there. And he said, I've got to give this group a fair chance to be successful, right? We've been missing a big for so long. We've, you know, that conversation has been there. And I've got to have a bigger sample size while giving these guys a fair chance, right? Giving them a big to have some success and work with. Yeah. I thought that was impressive, right? Because that's a sign of a leader, right? That's a sign that a lot of the veteran guys on this Raptors team can also learn from, right? Like taking a step back, silencing the noise a bit and tuning out the noise rather than saying, you know what? I can do more. I can contribute more. And that to me spoke volumes. And he went out and did that, right? He said, I trust these guys. So for the guys in the locker room, you know, if I'm Pascal, if I'm OG, if I'm, you know, Fred, Gary, like this man turned to us in the midst of all the criticism, in the midst of all the fire, and he had our back. He said, I'm rocking with you guys in this locker room because I believe in you guys. Mm-hmm. Right. And that to me should invigorate the group. That should inspire the group. That should calm their nerves a bit too, right? There's this, we've gotten past the trade deadline. And everybody that's going to be here is here, right? And he said that was a message to the group. He also did say, right, now it's time to buckle down, right? And I trust you guys, but there's a level of expectation, right? It's a different year. This is not Tampa year, you know, if we're in the playing situation, but we're going to compete. We're here to compete, get better, and so forth. So I thought that messaging, you know, was important. I thought that messaging was less for the media, more for, I know it was on a public stage, public platform and landscape there. And I thought that was more of a message to the guys in the locker room that publicly I'm going to protect you. I'm riding with you. I'm rocking with you guys. And there's got to be a return there from coaching staff, players down forth, because that gives you that boost of confidence that you need.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the comments on our YouTube page. I posted the Masai Ujiri presser, and along with, you know, a video of Jakob Poeltl and what he's going to be offering the Raptors, and a lot of negativity. A lot of people just wanted change. And it's funny that if this move was made, you know, earlier on during the summertime, last season or whatever, like, we're probably talking about a different Raptor team, a much better Raptor team. And we're not even having this conversation about, you know, are they going to strip it down and rebuild at the deadline? But for whatever reason, they didn't do it back then. I'm guessing because they felt the asking price was too much. They didn't want to lose Gary Trent Jr. And a few picks for Jakob Poeltl at that time. But obviously the Spurs, they had a change of heart, and they got the price that they also got to say this too. Ken Birch, salute. I'm happy that, you know, he's able to get like a good contract from the Raptors. Like, sure, the playing time hasn't been there. But he's gotten like a, you know, some stability in his life. And now going forward, hopefully he's able to find a more traditional role on a less funky team, because he is a backup big. He just hasn't been able to be that with the Raptors because of their funk.
And he's had some misfortune, right? Like
injuries,
you know, bad luck with injuries and so forth. So
yeah,
tip pat to my brother, Kim.
Yeah.
You know, well wishes, right? You want these guys obviously be in a position to succeed. Something you said that stuck out is that people want to change. But there's so much uncertainty that comes with change. Nobody has a crystal ball, right? And you look at this team, and I think I said it to you before. Why change? Like, what are you when you're asking for change? Where are you asking for it from, right? And for me, you look at, and obviously the front office was privy to all of this. You look at how the East is shaping up. They've obviously gotten weaker, and you look at what you've added to this team, and there's something there, right? Because you look at, okay, the Raptors have struggled with transition defense, defensive transition.
Yep.
And you bring in Jakob Poeltl, right? A guy that's first position, one of the best offensive rebounding bigs in the NBA. What does that do right away? That allows you now to send less guys to crash the glass.
Yep.
You know, rely on him a bit more. And then now you have these guys getting back in and creating that wall and now using their length to their advantage, right? So that should help there from the defensive, right away from the defensive side, right? One of the worst teams defending in transition, that should help. Now in the half court as well, is he, you know, I think we seen it the other day too when they played San Antonio. Is he going to switch out and be able to defend guys on the perimeter? Absolutely no, absolutely not. So we have to temper our expectations there. But what it does with the Raptors' style of play, they want to press up in the half court. They want to force you to turn the ball over, win the possessions battle. That also means there's going to be times where guys get backdoor cuts and, you know, you miss a deflection or two. He's 7'1". He takes up so much space. Even if he's not shot blocking, he's contesting, right, at the rim. And you got to think about it as, you know, somebody penetrating into the key or getting by. So there's a lot of little intangibles that is he going to be a 20-10 guy tomorrow? Is he going to be, you know, the next coming? No. But for areas that the Raptors need help in, you know, marginally, I think he does it. And that makes a big difference.
A lot of good things right there. He is a connective piece on both ends is, I think, a good way to put it. And Masai making this decision that, you know, I want to see what this looks like with him. I think it makes sense. I just wish it happened earlier on because you don't know what this team is technically, because of how, you know, shorthanded they were at the center position for a few years now. This isn't a new thing. This has been like this for a while. Some of it was by design. They wanted to try out this vision. But in the end, we're also seeing that you need someone. You need a big. You need someone who can do the things that Jakob Poeltl is going to do. And I think actually seeing Precious at the five over the past few weeks, it actually crystallized like how important it is, because he was just doing big man things at his size. He was rebounding, he was running the floor, he was, you know, setting screens, he was rolling, and it was valuable. And especially with the Raptors and how much talent they have in their starting lineup, you need just an intangibles person. I've said it before on this pod, you need a connective piece, just someone to do the little things. And I think that's what Jakob's going to do. The people that are disappointed that, you know, it wasn't a bigger move, I think it's understandable. I just wish they made this move earlier on, because we'd be further ahead in the process. But then again, like I said, maybe they didn't want to get rid of Gary, and that was maybe the price. And also, someone pointed out that this could be a pressure thing from MLSE, saying that we don't want to go through a rebuild. That's not where we want to be at this point, especially when they went through the Tampa year, and also just the whole COVID thing, not having fans in the stands and so forth. So that's also a very real thing. Money talks. Money makes the world go round.
Money makes the world go round. And rebuilds don't happen overnight. That's the other thing. Like, it's always, you know, it's great for conversation, but we're talking about a 4 to 8 on the best case scenario, 4 to 8 year, you know, turnaround, right? Because you got to give those guys cycles to develop. You're also, if you're talking about a rebuild, you're probably drafting a guy that's, you know, 1 year into college. These guys are young guys, and we're seeing the highs and the lows with Scotty, right? You've got to give them those the first contract to get acclimated, and the second contract to you know, come into their own. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, rebuilding, retooling, reshaping, we have to tread light with that, because we're also not, you know, traditionally Toronto hasn't been a place that lands biggest free agents, you know, right? So you're really dependent on the development of your homegrown players.
Yeah.
Right? And we have to just temper the expectations there. But at the same time, the pressure that you know, the city or the team may feel, or MLSC, or, you know, whomever, it's warranted, and it's a good thing, right? That means people care. The last couple of years, we've gotten a taste of success, right? You have a championship, you have a coach of the year, you have a rookie of the year, right? So on one end, we've been spoiled with a lot of success, but on the other end, we start to build a culture here. We start to build a fan base here. And it's not just for a city, it's for a country, right? And the fact that, you know, people care is also why the money keeps circulating. Like you said, money makes the world go around, right? So, you know, I don't necessarily think that's the direction, that should have been the direction to go right now, because that sets a lot back, right? Where you really have to give this group here the pieces that they need and plug and play a bit more, right? And you have some guys, and even to your point, that want to be here, right?
Yep.
Look at, you know, the press conference today, and the air is lighter in the room, right? Everybody's happier. And it's not like you're adding a completely new piece. You're adding a guy that's been here, a guy that's a, you know, one of our own and has a relationship with these guys. So that merging, that cohesion that you want to expedite may happen a lot faster than bringing somebody completely new. You also go, you know, if you look at the other side, for those that wanted, you know, a home run play, you go out and get, read the market and go and get a, you know, a stud temporarily. You've got to know what you're not getting the perfect player. So what are their holes? How did the holes in their game impact this team as well, right? It's, you know, there's a plus minus, there's pros and cons to everything.
Sure. Masai talked today and also, or yesterday, along with Pascal and Jakob, man. Like, this is a put up or shut up kind of time. Like, this is the time that you have to do this. And they got a runway here. Their schedule, I was looking at it the other few hours ago. Their schedule for the rest of February, it's pretty easy. Mm-hmm. A lot of home games. You got the Jazz tonight, who are, you know, in their tank mode. You got the Pistons, Magic, Pelicans, Pistons again, Cavaliers, Bulls. That's the rest of your February. The Raptors are on a 3-game win streak currently. That could go to 10. Like, that's not impossible. And the Eastern Conference, I want to ask you about this, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But now that the Brooklyn Nets have made their move, you know, they're going to probably get out of that top six. Miami Heat, they're still a little bit up and down. The Raptors are currently in the 10th spot. Like, there is something that's to be said about, you know, it's not impossible for them to make up this 4.5 game little stretch here and get into that top six. Like, that is very possible.
And you think about it, during, amidst all the controversy, all the adversity, all the rumors, they still found themselves on the road and put together a stretch of games, right? Which now puts them in even a better position considering their schedule. I think they have, you know, Utah twice, Detroit twice coming up, and New Orleans, right? So even in the next five alone, they can start trending in the right direction. East has gotten weaker. But I think for them, the important thing too is, or even us looking at the East and the scheduling, is there's only three teams in that top six that have a winning road record, right? And that's your Milwaukee, that's your Boston, and that's Philly, your top three teams, right? Yeah. After that, it's wide open, because you get into playoff situations. If you can't win road games, if you're not a road team that can come together as a group in that locker room, you don't get road wins, right? And anybody in playoff situation can muster up, anything can happen, you know, at home, right? So you can't leave yourself vulnerable. So for me, it's, can this team string together some wins right now? Can they come together, you know, faster? Guys, there's a good energy, there's a good feel now. You're adding a piece that you needed now. The other side to that is, you know, that Jakob brings is, we've spoke so much about needing a center. We've also spoke so much about needing some bench production. right? So I would assume if I'm Coach Nurse, we've needed a center. Jakob is going to get that spot.
You think so, right?
Yeah. I would assume so because he's now a defensive stopper, but he's a defensive anchor, and he's something different, right? 7-1. That bumps one of these guys that's been holding down this team, one of the starters, to the bench. So you've now added to that bench without even making a big play, without even making a big play, right? So as long as they keep that confidence and just understand to continue to do their role and be the best in their role, I think you get more bench contribution, right? So you become a better team.
Yeah, I saw some people throwing out the possibility of Gary staying in the starting lineup, and maybe it's like a Scotty Barnes going to the bench. I just can't see it. I don't think it makes sense, especially with who Scotty is. And he's a player that, despite not being a high volume 3-point shooter or an accurate 3-point shooter, he's just going to find space in the court, and he's going to continue to be, utilized in a good fashion. He's going to keep on being productive. And also, you check out Scotty early on, and then he's running your bench unit, right? With Precious and Chris, and then you got Gary Trent Jr., and then whoever the fifth person is, Thad, Malachi Flynn, whatever. But who starts matters less. I'll put it that way. Who starts, who plays those first like 5 minutes of the first and third don't matter too much. And who's going to be finishing games is going to probably be very different. Yeah, it's going to be different each game.
The only thing that matters is who's finishing the game. And to your point there, it could always change, right? Because now you're talking about a bit more depth and what are the matchups like coming to the end of the game and who's rolling, right? And I think that's what you got to do. Like, if you're a Coach Nurse, you're not putting guys out there just to appease them and make them happy. You're putting them out there to win the game. The difference for coaches is you're evaluated based on wins and losses, not classifying and being friendly with players, right? So if it's Gary's night, he's going to be out there to end the game. If it's Scotty's night, he's going to be out there to end the game. If Pascal isn't playing well, maybe he shouldn't be in there to end the game, right? Would be my take. But at the same token, to start, in that starting five, I imagine with the way Scotty's playing right now, it's a stark contrast from the Scotty we've seen earlier in the season, who had those inconsistencies with his intensity, with his focus, right? Right now, he seems to be laser focused, especially in those fourth quarters. And the reality is, Scotty may not be your biggest investment on the books, but he's your biggest investment long-term, right? Sure. So you want to utilize him right now, not just to win games, not just to fill the seats in the stands, but you want to teach him how to win, right? Yeah. You're teaching him how to win. He's got to learn real time if he's that investment, if he's going to be that good. And I think right now he's doing a good job of it.
The spirits are much better. Yesterday, after the trade deadline, and Gary found out that he was gonna be staying with the Raptors, he told Lindsey Dunn, "He's like, yo, I mean, I'm happy. I'm still here. I'm ready to rock. Let's go get this, Fred." Today, he was one of the players leaving the locker room towards the court, and he was singing. Just vibes are better.
You get Fred smiling and singing, and it's a good day. You know, it's a great day.
How important, from your perspective, is it to have the faith of the front office as a player?
That's huge. That's everything.
Yeah.
That's a boost of confidence. That's the just laying all the cards out on the table and saying, listen, you guys, we're on the same page. We're with you guys. We trust in you guys. We believe in you guys. And when we close this locker room behind us, it's just us in here. And we're going to do this together. Right? At the same token, right? I think Masai, he put his neck on the line for this group right here.
He did.
He just laid it out, put his neck on the line for this group. So there's got to be, an ROI, risk on this return, right? A return on this investment here with these guys. And they've got to say to him, thank you, right? We've got to show some appreciation with it, because at least they know what they have right here, right? They know the situation, they know the landscape. But now I've got, if you're Masai, you're commanding a lot more of them. You're demanding a lot more out of them because he's put himself out there for this group. But to have that confidence behind you, it speaks volumes for the player, because at least when you look these guys in their eyes and you look around, the practice facility and when you go into a game, you don't feel like the coaching staff or the front office actually wanted me out of here. You feel like they wanted me here. And you're always going to feel... You're always going to play better when you feel like you're welcome, when you feel like you're wanted. Every time players get traded, that's the first thing they talk about. Even Kyrie, you know, after his presser in Dallas was he wanted to be in a place where he felt wanted. Sure. Right. So Masai gave this group, Masai and Bobby gave this group that boost of confidence and that boost of, we want you here despite everything that's happened.
Yeah.
We're going to win with this group. Right. And that speaks volumes.
He apologized essentially to some of the core players saying, you know, we didn't get you a rim protector and that's our fault. That's big.
That's rare, right? The accountability that he took, right, that is extremely rare from front office, even from coaches, because it is just human nature. We always find, you know, when coaches are losing, they go into the media or they, uh-huh. you know, they point the finger at the team and the coach not playing, the team and the players are not playing hard enough, or we need more of this, we need more of that. You know, when players aren't playing well, they blame the coaches and say the offense, I'm not getting the ball, I'm not getting them enough minutes. So-and-so is not passing me the ball. Front office sometimes looks at coaches and coaching and say they're not doing the job that they're supposed to. But Masai, he took that one on the chin. He said the coaching staff is doing the best that they could with what they had. You know, he's supported his players and he stood up. He stood up, you know, took off everything he had, all his guard, and said, maybe that was on me for not giving this team what they needed. And you have to, you can't do nothing but respect that. And then he went out and gave them what, you know, in my opinion, not, you know, it's not a home run move, right? But at the same token, when you look at exactly what the Raptors need and the places they need improvement, Jakob brings those, you know, that skill set.
I wonder at what point yesterday Masai made that decision that we're just going to keep them. He said that he got calls on everyone. And during that, he thought, if I'm getting this many calls, it's like maybe they are that good, right? Like maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I should, you know, pivot and make this switch to bring it in a rim protector and see how things go here. I think it makes sense. I think it's a wise move.
You don't make a knee-jerk reaction, right? Yeah. For a long-term decision, mm-hmm. right? And I know fans in the moment right now are, you know, questioning it, but as a front office, you got to look at this thing from a 8-year cycle, right? Because these contracts are 3-4 years, right? And the long plan, the long game, right? You have to have that in mind. And again, the reality is you go into the off season, one, it's almost like a real estate market. You've tested your market right now with the guys that you have. Now you go into the summer market, which is the hottest market, especially into the drafts, and you have some more clarity there, and you still have those three pieces, right?
The draft, that's the big one. Draft. I think that's where we're going to see some movement.
That's the important part, right? Yeah. You also, to that point there, is just understanding, okay, KD is now in the West, right? Raptors are full of 6'8 wings, 6'8 guys that are defenders. Mm-hmm. They're always going to be, you know, vetted out and coveted because of those moves there. You have LeBron in the West. You have KD in the West. Devin Booker in the West.
Yeah.
Those guys are going to their value is going to be increased, not because of what they do here, but because of what teams need in the West to get out. Right. So you think about that, like even Memphis offering, you know, an insurmountable amount of first round picks for Kevin Durant, for OG and Ananobi. But hey, and then, you know, in the Raptors case, what did you give up, right? You gave up Kim, who probably needed a fresh start. You also gave up, what is it, a 2024 first round pick protected. You look at the draft, 2024 is probably going to be one of the weaker drafts right now in the last couple of years.
Yeah. So
just having a greater understanding of the full picture and less emotion involved will give you, you know, more of a perspective and a view.
He also said that the reason why he doesn't like making trades at the deadline is that the scope of teams who are interested in making trades, like it's less, which is true, right? There's only a certain amount of teams that are going to be looking to buy or sell within the trade deadline. But after the season's over, everyone's kind of in retool, rebuild, or some kind of mode. So there's more teams to tinker with. Michael Granger pointed out that if the Raptors were interested in trying to bring back all three players, and we're talking about, you know, Jakob, who he did say today that he's interested in re-signing with the Raptors. And he also said that, you know, I think based off of them bringing me in, I think they want to, you know, make this a long-term thing as well. But you got Jakob, you got Gary, and you got Fred. Grange said that there'd be roughly $70 million to play with to re-sign all three of those players. And that's not even like looking at the rest of the team. That's just for those three. And then after that, next season, you got Pascal, maybe Supermax eligible. We'll see what happens. OG and Scotty Barnes, his rookie max extension is going to be there. So money is going to have to be moved around. But I think it's important that you know what you're going to be going forward with. And I think that's going to reveal itself too. When you play these next 27 games, you're going to see, okay, so maybe he isn't a fit. He is a fit. Stuff like that is going to show. And then you can make a logical decision on where you're going to go with your team.
Yeah. And even from a business standpoint, right, when we talk about the money and where it needs to be dispersed and divvied up,
yeah,
that is all great today, right? Sure. In this moment, right? In this market, right? But I think we've seen it over the last 2 weeks, right? The Raptors are the most talked about, the most prized team and individuals in the league. And then what happens? You know, Kyrie wants out of Brooklyn. That changes the whole landscape of things.
Everything's
now gone to Phoenix, right? So that, you know, the market completely changed in the blink of, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours. That's going to be no different than when you have to make a decision on some of these guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else, you know, in the market may arise or, you know, start playing better, or there may be a better fit. So in theory, it's all great. It's all cute to talk about the numbers right now, but in a year and a half, like what's the market situation then? And who's available then, at what cost? And, you know, it's great. Great for conversation. Great, you know, shop talk, but that is today after the deadline when none of it really matters.
Yeah. All right, let's talk Jakob Poeltl.
The team, like you mentioned, could also get on a run and start to roll.
100%. We're talking
about something guys are sacrificing to come back. Maybe they take a little less just to stick together.
And that's something to keep in mind too. That's what I was thinking about, that if you keep them happy, if you have a winning culture, because right now, I mean, like Masai said yesterday that, you know, some guys are playing a little bit selfish. I mean, maybe that might happen, right? Team isn't playing well. Contracts are coming up. Guys want to make their money. Like maybe they're going to take a few more shots. Like I understand that. But if you start winning, you win a round or something like that, you got no role here. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I think this is a fun situation. I like these guys.
Winning solves a lot because that also makes you a lot more likable. That also makes you a lot more marketable. That also brings in a lot more outside money, right? So you can take, you know, a little less right here because you're winning and so much more is coming in over there, right? So to keep that together.
Money. Yeah, so Jakob Poeltl. Another thing to keep in mind too is that this void that's been there for a few seasons, at least you have that solved now, you know? Mm-hmm. Like whatever happens with OG, Fred, Gary, that's that. But for OG, he's probably a little bit more irreplaceable because of his skill set, you know, defensive player of the year capabilities. But you can find other players that can do similar things. But rim protection is really hard to find. There's only some players that can do it, and not all of them are as mobile as Jakob Poeltl is. So I want to look at his defense. I think a great example to use is how good the Raptors were when Christian Kloko was on the court. Right. He isn't there necessarily as an offensive player, you know, finishing around the rim and stuff like that, but 11.5 points per 100 possessions better with Kloko on the court. Why? Rim protection. Right. And he's not even like there yet necessarily, but that's what he was offering. And that's how much he helped the Raptors. Now you add in Jakob Poeltl, someone who's more experienced at this thing and also is a great offensive player, which we're going to get to in a second. You got something here.
And I think I mentioned it or touched on it earlier, at the simplest, the most basic form, Jakob is 7'1". There's so much real estate that he covers. Mm. When guys penetrate past that first line of defense, right? And remember, it's a physical game. And Jakob rotates over, right? You now have to automatically think, before he even blocks a shot, you've already, as a offense, have to start thinking about, how do I be reactive? How do I be instinctive? How do I get to a counter to get over or around him? Or what is the next play? What's the next pass? Those split seconds are where you're now, you know, somebody gets a tip on the ball, or, you know, somebody gets a deflection because you're second delayed and that backside is in position of rotation, right? And he helps as well because, again, clogging up that space and you're now making the offense think a split second or two. Guys on the backside that rotate, they have more time, right? They can get into position. Right. So I think that there's so much that he anchors your defense with. And he also understands at this point, you know, he's been in the league some time, understands the angles, understands how to avoid you know, picking up fouls, which we've seen Christian Coloco do that oftentimes. Just, you know, sometimes he's a pogo stick. He's jumping at everything, sure. just not understanding his opponent, the other players in this league, their tendencies and so forth. You have a guy sure. that understands that. And then, you know, the transition side, defensive transition is, it starts when you have this big here that can, you can send him to the rim, right? And you have four guys now that are getting back and creating a wall. And that's mm-hmm. probably been the weakest point of the Raptors defense. I think they're at the bottom of the league, maybe 27th in opponent fast break points.
Yeah.
You're not getting those up anymore, right? These guys sure. can get back, and now you're getting to really see, you know, the importance of their length, because they get back now, that free throw line, they're matched up, they're pointing, they're using their length. You're stopping that initial attack, right? Yeah. So, you know, from the defensive side, I think he brings so much. But again, and I'm not expecting him to be a lockdown defender. I'm expecting him to be a good team defender.
Yeah.
Right. And when he played a couple nights ago, you know, Pascal went at him, and that was a friendly reminder. They probably knew we're coming in, and Scotty was going at him when they got those switches. So they're still sure. you have to caution that as well. Teams are still going to try to pick him out on the perimeter. But if you can keep him under that rim as much as possible, keep him around that, around those areas, and the perimeter can do their job, everybody trusts each other, then you're working with something.
And everything starts to sing when you have a person like him. Even if you talk about a situation like that where Jakob is switched on to a superior player, the length of the Raptors collectively can actually help in those cases, right? We have Pascal out there, OG out there, Scotty out there, Fred, who's large in his own way. You know, that is going to help too. Like, this is why it's so important that the Raptors has got somebody that's going to help them in these situations, like, is that they're already very solid. I'm curious if they get a little bit less aggressive on the perimeter now that they actually have a rim protector. Do you play a little bit more composed defense and challenge teams to get through you? Or do you continue playing aggressive? Because I think Nick Nurse has also said that he enjoys playing aggressive defense. He thinks it's important in the NBA. But I also think, you know, other teams have snuffed that out. And this has also been part of the problem with the Raptors defense, is that teams kind of know who they are. You know, they're not a surprise anymore. But it's going to help having Jakob Poeltl there as a rim protector. At the same time, though, playing drop, look at the Milwaukee Bucks, how effective it can be when you challenge teams to make shots from the mid-range. You take away the three-point line, you take away the rim, make them take those shots from there. Plus, with the Raptors' overall length, I think there's something there that maybe they should, you know, continue to do a bit more of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, style of play, you've got to make a decision, right? It's are your team that's going to be pressing up and pressuring teams and trying to force them to cough the ball up, or your team that's really just containing. Right. So I think it'll actually be easier to continue with your brand of play right now, because you are integrating one player as opposed to changing the brand of play for the other 5-10 guys that are going to be playing the minutes for the one player. Right. And I think you still play to your strengths. And for me, it's on the transition side. Can you eliminate those 15 to 20 points that teams are getting in the transition, right? Because if you look at the games that they've lost, very slim, right? Very slim margins, right? So it's just those 20 points that you're getting in transition, if you can cut those down to half of that with just, you know, now you have that great offensive rebounder as a big and guys getting back and stopping there, then, hey, you win the possession battle, you stop transition, right? You've saved yourself 15 to 20 points on the board, right? So I think that's where you stick with your plan.
Right now, the Raptors are 17th in defense and 16th in defensive rebounding. The amount of occasions, man, where they play good defense and then they don't get the rebound. Some of that's going to get a little bit better. And again, Precious Achiuwa, like, he did a really good job. But even that, just seeing Precious grab those boards when he was starting at the five, it was such a relief. He just kept on grabbing them. And then you got a 7-1 player instead. And then you also still have Precious as your backup five if you want to use him that way. And I think Precious is going to, you know, close in some games because he is still very good. Not every team has a Joel Embiid. And you're going to want probably, we'll get to the offense in a second, but you're probably going to want his ability to stretch the floor at points. But the Raptors having more roster versatility, which is hilarious because the whole motto is that they wanted to be versatile, but now they actually have roster versatility. You could see situations where they're closing with like four or five different lineups and they're all going to be pretty good.
And it's funny you say that. Well, I think right there, it's you have two players that actually complement each other, right? Mm. Because Jakob brings one style, one brand of basketball, and Achiuwa is bringing, you know, another of athletic play, energy, up and down. You're going to get some mistakes with him, which is fine as long as he's committed to the intensity on one end, and he's never shy of that, right? He's always going up there and competing. That's one thing we have to credit him is sometimes, and earlier in the season, you have to tell him, like, no, like, slow down a bit. But he's gotten so much smarter. He's, you know,
he
now
really has.
Yeah,
he's emphasized that. He really has grown as a playmaker and a basketball IQ.
Yeah. I think that you attribute that sometimes guys sitting out when he was out with his ankle injury, he had a chance to just watch games, right? Yeah. Just watch practice and take a seat back and just evaluate, like, man, how can I help this team? Right. Sure. And the reality is he came back, got himself acclimated, got himself healthy again, got his pop under him, got his second wind under him. And now you see it, like, he's just growing. And sometimes less is more. You know, you're swinging the ball through him to get it to the second side. He's not just taking that random three at the top of the key anymore. He's actually getting it over, you know, sending a good screen, rolling to the basket hard, getting himself opportunities that way, getting on the offensive boards, slashing, and you really using his God-given ability as opposed to just trying to be a good all-around player, right? Sure. Better to be, you know, a great player in your niche than just trying to be this guy. And sometimes it comes from the grassroots level where everybody's taught, go get points, go get this. No, like, be the best in your role. And you help a team, and as long as you're helping a team, you're going to be on that court. As long as you're helping a coach win, you're going to earn minutes.
Yeah.
And it's funny, to your point, talking about the versatility of the roster now, it's almost like, you know, from a reporter standpoint, right? And I know you do a lot of writing as well. As if you went into the...
I don't actually, but go on. I don't do any. anyway.
If from a reporter standpoint, though, if you were to go into these pressers and you're only allowed to write about one player every single day, how much work could you really do? Like, there's only so much before you run out of, you know, stories, narratives, and so forth to talk about. It's no different than a coach. If you look down your bench and you have the same exact profile, when things aren't going right, it's not like you can change up the scheme or anything.
Guys
coming in are the exact same skill set.
Yeah.
Right. Now you add somebody that brings something different, it gives you a change of pace.
Hopefully minutes go down for some of those starters. And Masai was asked yesterday, I forget the report, I would credit them if I could. He was asked about three-point shooting in the Raptors, and like, do you think it's important that you have that, or do you think you can build around, you know, the fact that you're not a great three-point shooting team? He's like, no, we have to become a top 10, top 5 three-point shooting team. It's going to be a process. And I'm mentioning this because the murky part of Jakob Poeltl being on the court with, you know, Pascal and Scotty and stuff like that is that your three-point shooting is going down the tank. Pascal has his moments as a catch and shoot player and also just a pull-up shooter. Scotty has his moments, and Jakob, you know, he's shooting 60% from the free throw line. And that's a career high for him. That's good, but he's not a three-point shooter either. So how do you think you work around this? Let's get to the offensive side of things, because Jakob does offer a lot of things that I think is going to help the Raptors have a better flow and a better pace. But the three-point shooting itself, when you have Jakob and Pascal and Scotty all on the court, how do you work around it?
Well, I think for one, where he helps there and from the three-point shooting is you now give another dimension, right? Because this is somebody that you can throw the ball into the post and that commands some attention, right? Because he has the ability to pass the basketball the way he does. If you watch how he played with the Spurs, there's nights where he's led them in assists, right? And we're talking about 3, 4, 5, 6 assists. And over his career, he's passed the ball well. He can also put the ball in the hole. Is he going to give you 20 a night? No, but he gives you something enough that you have to respect it.
Yeah.
Anybody that's shooting 60% from the floor, you have to be able to you have to respect what he's doing, right? So that now, you know, commands some attention, and you can now kick out. Are you the greatest three-point shooting team? No, but you have capable three-point shooters. So if you're able to get cleaner looks, more open looks, guys are going to knock them down. I think a lot of what was happening before is we're in a time in the NBA where everybody's switching everything, right? So If guys are trying to isolate and go one-on-one from the perimeter or getting pick and roll actions and teams are switching, there's no advantage, right? So you're not getting the cleaner looks. You're not getting as open shots as you'd like. You're getting some of those tougher shots off of the dribble. You're getting some shots where guys are, you know, trying to beat the shot clock and it becomes a hot potato. You're kicking out to somebody and they're getting it up under duress, which aren't great shots, right? Especially for a team that's not in rhythm from the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're not fighting that as much. You can actually dump it inside, or you can run a pick and roll with a big, and you know, he gets that short roll and he has the ability to make that little push shot, make that little floater, right? But I think it just changes up the idea, the concept of what you can do by just having that presence, drop it down. He's shooting 6% from the floor.
Yep.
So he knows himself, right? He knows his strengths, he knows his weaknesses, and you stick to that.
He's averaging 3.1 assists per game. That's a career high, and a 16.6 assist percentage, which is, again, a career high for him. One of the best among centers. And the Raptors themselves are 24th in assists per game. Look, Jakob, I mean, he's a next action big. He's honed in on that skill with San Antonio. You can see how he could help in their DHO, in their pick and roll. Fred's needed a pick and roll partner, a reliable one. He's got one now. He's going to actually set great screens. He's going to roll the bucket. Fred himself is a good passer in his own right, and you are able to see ways in which those two could hopefully become a bit of a pick and roll duo that could really bend defenses and get them collapsing, and then you can get more open shots. Obviously, more open the better for any shooter, right? Whether it's Pascal or Scotty.
Well, to add to that too, he's 7'1", right?
Sight lines.
Right. Yeah. So there's no, you know, defense is on the court level.
Yeah.
Right. But there's no defense when he puts his arms up in the air and gives you a big target and rolls to the basket as a big target. There's no defense there.
Sure.
Right. There's nobody that can get up there. And I think we've been on the opposing end of it a lot of times where we've come up with these you know, bigs that we're giving up a couple of inches to.
Yeah.
And they're a big target, you know, the perimeter can get it into them and they're just turning and dropping it in the basket. Mm-hmm. Right. So now you can become that team where you can take advantage of that matchup, right?
Yeah.
7'1", 7-foot wingspan. Okay, give me a big target. Fred, give me a big target. Get the ball and you're just finishing it.
They got to start cutting a bit more too. I mean, with someone like Jakob, that's where he is going to be best utilized, especially if you're not going to be a great three-point shooting team, then you probably have to have a bit more movement. And I like the idea of Gary and Fred, you know, cutting off ball. They're doing DHO. Oh, wait, no, second. We're going to cut back door and Jakob finds them. Or Jakob decides to keep the ball and he has an open lane to the rim. Or guess what? Maybe off ball, you got Fred and Scotty doing some screening actions and one of them flashes to the middle. And now you got a high low thing happening. This is how they're going to have to think. And probably just being like really, really purposeful with their actions and doing things with purpose and making it fast and being aware of the spacing is going to be really important. Like three-point shooting is going to be a problem and teams are going to try and make them have to make shots from there. But for the Raptors, you have to be able to overwhelm teams with your size and your movement. And they haven't been a great movement teams in terms of just like cutting off ball. They've been developing that. But now you have a big who can probably do it and help you just get better offense overall.
Yeah, I think that's also where, you know, and Masai touched on it yesterday as well in his presser in terms of, you know, some of the selfishness that we've seen and he didn't single out just one player, just across the board at times. And it's tough, right? When you're not making shots and sometimes you're playing a little bit too much one-on-one, the two or three possessions go by and nobody else has touched the ball, then you finally get it and you feel like, okay, it's my turn now, right? So, you know, when you have a post presence that can is also a willing passer, I think that helps everybody so much more because now you can come off the ball and trust that you're going to get it back, trust your cuts. And the reality is, you cut back door, you get a dunk. Everybody wants a dunk. Everybody wants to get the fans involved and get that. So get that excitement going, get the juices flowing. So I think you get a bit more there. That 3-point shooting, again, if you get cleaner looks and you're not playing as perimeter oriented, then you start to get those wide open shots. And if you knock down one, then you feel comfortable knocking down two. You're not thinking about taking them. And that's where you start to roll a bit. So, you know, similar to what Masai said, you want to become a better 3-point shooting team, whether it be by development or, you know, evaluating later and seeing what you can get in the summer. But in today's game, and it's not just about the analytics, in today's game, the way defenses play, you have to be able to shoot that.
Yeah. Wrapping up the pod in a second here. I think it's easier to figure out how Pascal is going to fit because he's the number one option, right? OG and Scotty are a bit different. And talking about Scotty now, he has been used as the five, and he's been used in this role that Jakob is now going to take over, essentially, right? As the screen roller, DHO. Now, like, how does Scotty get his offense? Because, I mean, he's a great isolation scorer. There's definitely something there, and we keep on seeing it over and over. And, you know, when he gets passive, I think it's more about him trying to make the right play instead of trying to, you know, or just not, you know, being aggressive or not being in the mentality or not focused. I think he's just trying to make sure that the Raptors are, you know, spacing properly, and he's trying to be a point guard in his own way, right? He's acknowledging, he's being aware of the court. But now for Scotty, if he's not doing that role as much, and he probably, you know, backup point guard, he's going to get his minutes as the focal point and the playmaker. But when he's on the court with the starters plus Jakob, I'm curious what you think. How does Scotty manufacture his offense?
Well, I think for one, Scotty, I think it's clear that you've got to engage Scotty, and he's got to feel engaged in the game, or he loses a little focus, right? He gets a little off track. But when he is, I think, you know, those two can complement each other just fine, right? Because you have Scotty that's, you know, he catches that ball at the high post, and you have a big target that's going to post down low. You know, big to big, you can play off each other, right? So Jakob can get some initial, you know, early looks and try and get some low post positioning. And if not, can go over onto, like you mentioned, onto a second side set of screen from one of those Pascals or any of those guys that can come off and then get another look themselves, while Scotty still has that ability to survey the court and then find his way to, you know, take advantage. There's a lot of ways that you could really utilize both and their skill sets. But the main thing is that Scotty's going to find a way, right? His game he's more like a 90s player. It's not sexy, it's not cute all the time, but if he's engaged, he's going to contribute something, whether it be from the defensive side, whether it be on the offensive side, and he doesn't always need to score to be impactful. Yeah. And that's the thing that you like about him. A lot of times he shares a lot of passion when his teammates are getting off, or when he's a part of a play where, you know, his teammates score the basketball. At 21 years old in the league that's throwing out so much money for guys that are scoring the basketball, it's impressive to see him enthused and share that passion even when he's not scoring the ball.
Transition offense is going to get a lot better too. Jakob's going to kickstart that, and then you also have a big who can run the floor and probably hit the other big. And if they're not back, similar to what they do with OG and Scotty, like if Jakob has a smaller player, you feed the post, find him. He's probably going to finish in the post. He does a great job. He's got a great touch. He's had that since his Toronto days. He always had a nice touch around the basket. Scotty does too. All right, man, this was really fun. I'm happy to have you aboard. Anything you want to shout out? Anything coming up?
Let's get some wins.
Dubs. All right, everyone. Hopefully Jakob Poeltl plays tonight. We don't know at this moment if he's going to, but he is going to be around the corner. Let's see what happens here with the Toronto Raptors. Let's see if they can reel off some wins and get back into that top six. Who knows? All right. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy yourselves. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.